Inoho, please be seated.
Okay, so I hope you got lunch and we've got some questions, especially with Commissioner Edmonds.
Good afternoon there. So I wonder if you've got policy 6.4.19 in front of you, and that's in volume one.
I do. I have it right.
You do have
the top.
That. Oh, that's excellent. So I just have some questions I want to work through in relation to your proposition. So we've got 6.4.19 there.
Yes.
And that lists an A to G.
Does.
And then we've got one of these things that I'm always delighted by, not that I see, that has an explanation that purports to expand on the policy. And I'm looking at the first sentence. And perhaps you could just read it out, so just the first sentence
of
so that other people understand what we're talking about.
Indeed. The first sentence of the explanation says, the duration of each resource consent to take and use water should have regard to the particular circumstances of the activity and its likely environmental effects, but there needs to be a good reason for the council to reduce duration of consents from that required for the purpose of use.
Right, and so we've had a bit of evidence about how people coming and talking to us about what their perception of that might mean in reality and under in the change under the current regime. Okay. So my understanding is that your proposed provisions mean that the three different situations that we're dealing with in this plan change would all come under 6.4.19 in terms of duration. So that would be DEM permits, yes, take and use of surface water, including groundwater, where the resource consents under the RMA expire at the end of 2025.
Within that period, yes.
Yes, and then the third situation, the take and use of fresh water, new water
new.
Proposals, if
yep.
you like.
Under those two policies, which existing and new.
Yes, which somewhere suggested perhaps the two could be rolled together.
They seem to be getting closer.
Yes. So just wanting to make sure that I understand.
Yes, so what I'm suggesting is that for hydro, where 6 years is sought, that there still be some provision within at a policy level of the considerations that the consent authority would turn their mind to in considering whether a greater than 6 years is appropriate in the circumstances of the application.
Sure, but you haven't suggested any changes to 6.4.19 itself, have
no,
you?
No, it seemed a convenient place to start from without adding the same kind of concepts into the PC7 policies and making that more convoluted.
So we've had quite a comprehensive case presented by Trustpower, and we've heard that in terms of the canals and the takes that need reconsenting, you've got your applications in,
yes.
And that Trustpower has, and that it's seeking, I'm a little unclear, it might have been 18 years originally and now it's 17 years or something in order to fit into Waipori?
The complexity of the Waipori consents expire in 2038, so the desire by Trustpower is that these applications that are being renewed fit into that same time frame to enable the whole thing, the whole jigsaw puzzle of consents and parts to be assessed together in the future.
Sure. So I guess I'm wondering, given that you've come along and you've got a number of witnesses and you've presented quite a comprehensive case, particularly in relation to that, whether there might be some possibility of identifying these particular things as warranting some exception within that time frame. In other words, a specific provision in this plan change that might deal with that, rather than raising the whole of the sort of the hydro sector when we don't have a lot of evidence on that.
Yes, I appreciate that. One of my difficulties, as you've heard, is that I'm not on the Trustpower team involved with those consent applications, so I don't have intimate knowledge of them. And of course, when I assisted write the submission and evidence, not all of those applications were lodged. So they're now lodged, and that changes the situation in terms of where this fits. They are in process with their activity statuses set from when they were lodged. Some were lodged prior to Plan Change 7 actually being notified, so they've got discretionary activity status.
So that was the three, was it?
Yeah, Crystals, Blackrock and Shepherds, and then Beaumont was lodged just in March this year, so it sits under the Plan Change 7 regime.
So if you were being asked as to what an exception might be in terms of those four components of the scheme that you've just spoken to are, how might you do that as a planner?
Goodness, so I guess what you're essentially suggesting is a bespoke set of provisions.
Well, we have so much stuff called bespoke. I think I'd rather label it as a specific
provision set.
Yes, a specific approach.
Yes. So I guess what you'd be looking at if you were narrowing that specific approach to those seven deemed permits across four intakes is you'd be looking for a rule, but you'd also then need to have something with it at the policy level that directs where that rule comes from and shows that it's not out of context with what the plan change is trying to achieve.
So just teasing that out a bit, so what might you be thinking of in terms of a policy signal?
It's probably not dissimilar from what I've suggested. It's that case-specific consideration of whether a longer duration is appropriate, and if so, under what circumstances. So that's where I went back and looked at things like what 6419 have in terms of, and what I've referred to before, in terms of things like that ability to have adaptive management built into that longer consent to deal with things that change over time.
But
and
there's no policy signal for that, is there? I mean, that's what we're really struggling with here, is that there's no policy signal on outcomes. So if that's the case and the court is minded to do something for Trustpower, what might that look like?
So when you say in terms of outcomes, you're meaning the environmental outcomes that go with...
Well, under policy, when I talk about policy, it's the objectives and policy. You can either have environmental outcomes or you can have policy, which isn't particularly geared to environmental outcomes, but which is setting a framework.
Procedural
one, you know. You can have two.
Yeah.
So here we have none. And so we're asking, you know, if there is something to be done for Trustpower, can it look like... What would it look like and why?
Yeah. And what I'm suggesting is that the policy framework that you'd need is the consideration of the outcomes of a longer duration, both in terms of why it's needed, so that the nature of the activity, the investment for hydro and that kind of thing, but also what the effects of that might be or how they'd be mitigated.
Mm.
So what kind of consideration the consent authority would turn its mind to when granting a longer term, in this case for the deemed permit applications through to 2038. The other thing that was very much on my mind though is because that policy without the rules in Plan Change 7 applies to new takes, and I know that Trustpower at least and possibly other consent holders and hydro operators are always looking at chances for
Want you to address the existing, not the new.
Right.
Leave it to us with the new. Okay?
Cool. Yep. So what I think needs to be done for the existing consent is to have a policy framework that enables consideration of effects of a longer duration on a case-specific basis and how those can be managed through a consenting policy, process for a longer duration.
I suppose the question is, does that policy 6419 and the operative plan do that, particularly with the caveats that then follow in the explanation?
Mm.
Because Trustpower, I presume, and here we're only looking at Trustpower, will always be seeking to put into place either upgrading or maintaining existing assets for a period longer than, presumably actually a period longer than 35 years. And we've heard that now across the board. Everybody across the board puts in their infrastructure, assuming longer than 35 years. And that's part of the problem with this operative plan is that everybody does it, so everybody gets it. So, so there are some difficulties for the court and just keying into that policy, or there may be difficulties for the court, keying into the policy with its explanations.
Mm. I guess.
And also the policy doesn't particularly address the environment, but or doesn't comprehensively address the environment.
No.
It's not even seeking to.
It's not specifically seeking to address the environment. I guess what I liked about this was that it's starting to talk to some of the methodology that you could build into considering a longer duration, with its pointers to things like adaptive management, which is looking at how to make changes within a consent over time to respond to changes in the both legislative and physical environment, and also particularly that pointer in D to the extent to which the risk of potentially significant adverse effects arising from the activity can be adequately managed through review conditions. And I guess what I was looking at was if there was a potential for a significant adverse effect to occur that could not be managed, that could be grounds in that hypothetical situation to seek more information, seek more mitigation, or hypothetically decline a consent, because it's asking you to question what the effects could be of a longer duration.
And I think here you're touching on an important point, is with a view to replacement consents, which can be declined, under your approach, which is looking at, keying into that policy on duration, where is the signal that it can be declined on its merits? And does that also need to be addressed?
Yeah. I think that could be made more explicit at a policy level. And it's the nature of this current objective and policy, which started off very much from a procedural regime, which is not really looking at that bigger picture, and I think it could be brought in more clearly.
Otherwise it looks like a controlled activity, I think, with the only matter of controlled duration. Would that not be fair? Is what it looks like? Has that sense of that?
It feels
like that.
Angled that way, yeah.
What activity status might you be thinking of in terms of this policy signal?
I think it's reasonable that if you're bringing in consideration of effects of a longer term, so effects of a longer duration, that you have to have the ability to decline it. Because otherwise, you're just simply saying that things can continue without considering the wider effects. So you have to have that at a status that is in that, probably in that discretionary camp, that says there, you know, all issues will be taken into account, duration will be considered seriously, but if it can't stack up, there is the ability for the council to decline.
Can't stack up against what, though? Because at the moment, can't stack up for a discretionary activity for a replacement consent would be can't stack up having regard to the two MPSs and some provision in the RPS for renewables, yeah?
And fresh water, because you're still going to be considering that under 104 as part of the matters to have regard. I didn't look up the wording in the break.
It is have regard, I think, but I'm interested in policy. I'm not interested in effect because part. Well, I am interested in effects, but it's it's what the policy guidance is on those effects.
Yeah,
and
it's not clear enough.
And it's not clear
enough. If this plan changes to deal with effects, and I have heard a lot of the discussion.
Presumably, they must if you want a discretionary activity looking for over 6 years.
A longer term. Yes. And so there's not enough currently in the policy framework, which was more geared towards procedure rather than procedure plus.
So then what are we to, looking at replacement consents, what are we to do about that? Because you gear into, the duration and, the duration policy under the operative plan. So as you've just agreed, that starts to feel like, it's just a control. It looks like a controlled activity, notwithstanding it's actually noted up as being discretionary. So it's confusing signals.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to write us it out, but you do have to give us some guidance as to what we're meant to do here because we're interested.
Yes. And I guess that 6419 is starting, whilst it reads a bit controlled, it's starting to sort of put out signals of effects, and it's about making that explicit, whether it be whether the mechanism is actually then taking that duration consideration, bringing into a policy framework within PC7 that is explicit about considering the effects of the case when looking at the duration longer and incorporating those kind of issues that are in 6419 and going that step further to be more explicit about effects on the environment. And I guess that's where you need to decide whether you want to be general about effects. I've heard lots of the evidence you've had around different types of effects on the water bodies, cultural effects and the like, or whether you keep that policy level general. And the nature of the activity, which I guess is also what 6419 is asking you to have regard to when you're looking at that duration. Why?
Yeah.
Why is someone asking for longer?
Everybody's managed thus far, well, many have managed thus far to convince the council, especially of the activity. So it hasn't actually seen... It's
not been strong enough to date.
Yeah.
So short of trying to draft you up something, I think that's the kind of parameters you're looking at, is that better consideration of both the why, the how, and the what effects.
And also the time frame that you would be working within in terms of the wider consenting that this is designed to catch up with if it gets through.
And we keep talking about longer duration, and I guess it's all relative, isn't it? You've got the 6 years, and then you've got 35 out there under the Act. There's quite a lot of room between 7 and 34.
Mm.
So that's got to be relevant as well to the considerations.
Well, yes, I was going further than that. I was thinking about the date that we've been given in terms of the bigger picture consenting, reconsenting that has to take place. And what specific policy you might need in connection with that, as well as the rule framework comes off that and needs to be considered. So if you're thinking about it just in that term and not in a very broad sense, what do you think are the really key things in your mind?
So, yeah, as I said, if you're thinking just about the deemed permits, and so that existing stuff, which it's about a policy that directs consideration of the nature of the activity and the term sought and the reasons for that, together with what effects a longer than 6-year duration could have and how those could be managed or are proposed to be managed to determine whether the duration sought is acceptable or not, and if not, to set a condition differently. I could have a go at drafting it if you wanted.
I think we need to think about all of this. You know, to the extent that your hydro is different from anything, well, I'm not sure, but that's a globalisation, a global statement. What is important about hydro in this context is, aside from the fact it's got an NPS RE, you know, reg, it is also an important means to address climate change.
Indeed.
Yeah. And so, speaking for myself, that may be what will get you over the line, but possibly not looking like this as you've proposed it, because I think there are some flaws there. You'd never propose a rule without a parent, you know, sort of without a parent policy, parent objective. It's not good planning. So, and of course, the alternative is that you just don't do it here and you just say all hydro goes under the operative plan. So that might be the other easy way of dealing with it.
And that's where the movement of time has made this difficult, because the original set of provisions that I had different to, they had different changes at that objective and policy level to what's evolved through things like the conferencing. So it's gotten a little turned around a wee bit as things have moved on.
So just thinking about the water plan, is there anything of any assistance in that specifically directed at hydro?
It does
in the policy sense.
The water plan doesn't have. No, the water plan doesn't have hydro focus. It doesn't have that in it.
At all?
No. Which made it even more difficult.
Yes.
Which is where I'd picked up that existing duration aspect had been attempted to be covered, but not in the context of hydro.
So you did answer questions about how that related to the NPS reg, and I wasn't sure where you'd ended up with that.
So the water plan doesn't give effect to the NPS, the regional policy statement does.
So you're going to be going upstairs for that, and then
So that the RPS is pretty good. It's pretty much mirroring the terminology from the NPS, and then there's absence below that.
Okay.
In the current framework.
Current framework.
So the regional plans, to summarise, the regional plans are neither giving effect to the NPS for renewables nor the NPS for freshwater management.
Correct.
Yeah.
And or the RPS.
And the RPS, the RPS, insofar as it likes to mirror language in the you know, in an NPS, is saying something about renewables but nothing about freshwater management. Is that what you're saying?
The RPS was framed, of course, prior to the new NPS freshwater. So both tiers are absent of the current national policy statement on fresh water.
Well, it's less than ideal applying for resource consents to be assessed under NPSs directly.
It's difficult, isn't it?
any other questions? No?
One yet?
For new resource consents. New resource consents under your provisions would fall to be assessed as a discretionary activity under this for a period greater than 6 years. Is that correct?
No.
No? Okay.
New consents, new takes,
yep,
wouldn't be under these rules because
yep,
these only relate to the deemed and the ones soon to expire. They'd be under the rest of the water plan, as is the case for all other new activities
under this
plan change.
Okay, so it's just introducing a policy about duration.
Because this plan change brought in a policy that applies to everything new as well as all the existing, so that's the effect of that policy too.
So for new resource consents, policy two would have hydro being solely assessed under the operative plan?
Yes. Because what Policy 2 did was basically said that for any new water takes of any type, the only policy you could consider is this one that says only grant for 6 years. So irrespective of all the other policies in the water plan, good, bad or otherwise, about effects or duration or anything, this became the only policy that applied.
For duration?
Well, I don't know if it even is about duration, because it says irrespective of any other policy.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Only grant for 6 years, full stop. So,
did you think this policy, point two, excluded consideration, or could be interpreted to exclude consideration of the operative plan for new consents?
It was at least ambiguous, in my view, whether that was irrespective of any other policies on duration, only 6 years, or irrespective of any other policies, full stop. And I think that's, a difficulty with putting a policy into a plan change that's dealing with deemed permits, to bring in a policy that deals with everything outside the plan change in a way that does or doesn't connect to a whole other plan regime for new water takes, for all sorts of activities, primary, supplementary and the like, with a whole, regardless of whether it's a good plan or not, at least it's it's got all of its policies and rules theoretically talking to each other, and then this one's just sort of jumped in.
So would a better approach have been in the case of policy two, to rather than introducing that policy, would have been to amend policy 4.6.19 and say, but in the case of, and then make your exclusion there?
I think at least in doing that, it would have been clear that this, the equivalent of this, was only about duration, whereas it is ambiguous to me over whether this is the only policy or not.
And I think that's probably a fair comment, I think, at the moment. Yeah. All right. Have you got any other questions, or is that all your questions?
No, it's all your questions.
Thank you.
Okay, so those are the court's questions. Anything arising?
No, there's not, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. So thank you very much. That's longer than expected, so that was very, very helpful.
Thank you.
Ma'am, so notwithstanding the conversation between the bench and Ms. Stiles, that is the case, subject to the closing of Trustpower at some time in the future, ma'am.
Yep.
So thank you, we'll see you later.
See you later. Okay, very good. All right, so probably with you, Mr. Page.
Yeah. I'm going to seek your leave to change up the order of the first two witnesses.
Yep.
I'm hoping that we might be able to deal with Mr. Graham relatively quickly for reasons which will probably be apparent from the joint witness statement, and that way we can then get to Ms. McKeegan, allow Mr. Graham to get back on the road and get back to Central Otago.
Okay. Nothing's apparent to me from the joint witness statement why Mr. Graham wants to go prior, but I don't think we've got any problems with that. Yeah.
No, I've discussed it with my friend Mr. Moore, and he understands why I'm doing this, and it should become apparent as we deal with it.
Okay, so what's the reason, what is the thing about the joint witness statement?
Well, Mr. Graham's evidence is really concerned with the effect of the notified averaging provisions in the schedule on infrastructure design. And the schedule has moved on, rather, from in the joint witness statement, so I was just going to get Mr. Graham to confirm that that's the case.
Okay, that sounds good. Just got to find his evidence, but that sounds good. So shall we go with Mr. Graham?
Call David Graham.
I do. Thanks.
Is your full name David Neil Graham?
It is.
And are you a director of Iritec Otago Limited in Cromwell?
Yes.
And is your specialist field the design and installation of irrigation systems?
It is, yes.
And did you give, did you prepare rather a brief of evidence dated the 5th of February 2021?
Yes.
And do you confirm that it's true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
It is.
Yeah. Now, when you prepared your evidence, were you responding to the notified schedule to Plan Change 7, which sought to reallocate water for irrigation purposes based on an average of the maxima of data records for irrigation use?
Yes, it was.
And is your evidence really directed at the consequence for that averaging approach on the design and operation of irrigation systems?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Now, I gather you didn't participate, because your name isn't on it, in the joint witness conferencing on the 2nd to the 4th of May, which addressed how the experts who took part in that exercise were now recommending to the court that the schedule should be amended.
Yes, that's correct. I wasn't there.
And is it your understanding that the experts are now recommending to the court that the schedule approach should adopt the maximum of rates of take and volumes for data records?
Yes.
And if that approach were to find favour with the court, would that resolve your concerns?
Yes, it would.
Thank you. Nothing further, Mark.
Very good. Now we have fish and game, or you want to go after Mr. Moore?
No, I've
withdrawn. You withdrawn? Okay. All right, so I think it's just you, Mr. Moore.
And in light of the exchange that has just unfolded, I have no further questions.
Okay. Have you got any questions?
Well, I just had one question, which I was going to put to the next witness who I thought was going to go first, and that's in relation to the Lindis case and the figures that are being provided in terms of previously allocated abstraction rate. You've referred to it in your paragraph 21. Now, my memory of all of this, that I was on the Lindis case, is that there was a very large paper allocation.
Yes, there was.
That had never been exercised, and that, I think, the figures, I did take the precaution of getting the Lindis decision to make sure I knew what I was talking about. There's that sum of consented primary allocation rates of take, that's the paper takes, if you like, and there was a figure of 3,777, which somewhere along the line got reduced to 3,640. And the actual maximum measured instantaneous daily mean rate of take was down at 2,255. So there's quite a difference between those two numbers.
There is. I thought the actual rate of maximum rate of take was down to 1,639.
Sorry, that
final...
was the at the end of the process. Oh, that, okay. That's where it headed. But I was just looking at the comparisons that were being drawn by you and
yeah.
the witness to come between that 3,200, which isn't actually as high as the figure that was given as to what had been being taken in reality. And I thought it was sensible to get it clearly on the record that,
yep.
that those figures aren't correct and that there was a paper allocation, but that wasn't what was being taken.
I suppose the paper allocation was available to be taken if the water was available, wasn't it?
But it hadn't been taken, and I just wanted to have that on the record.
Do you agree with that? Do you agree with the Commissioner?
I don't actually have the ability to answer that question. I don't
okay,
know.
Right. That's all, yep, that's all you need to say. Okay.
No, I have no questions.
And I have no questions. Anything arising? Thank you. Thank you very much for your evidence.
Mr. Graham, the excuse, so can we turn?
Absolutely.
So back with the program, I now call Susan Helen Keig. Your full name Susan Helen McKeag?
Yes.
And are you an environmental farm consultant and director of McKeag Consulting Limited?
Yes.
And did you prepare a brief of evidence dated the 4th of February 2021?
Yes.
And do you confirm that the evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
Thank you. Now, have you prepared a summary that you wish to read?
I have.
And the court should have that now?
We do.
Ms. McKeag, would you please read the summary?
Thank you. Okay. I've just captured some of the key points and also picked up a little bit of what's in the evidence with some of the flavour that's been talked about up until now. Irrigators across central Otago have been doing extensive background work preparing for deem permit and water permit replacement for many years now. The water permit applications are now all lodged with the ORC. The proposals in the application utilise ORC science and information, and wherever possible, the gaps have been filled by additional science work contracted by the farmers. The big applications that commenced years ago involved engaging with all parties early on. Just by way of example, in the Manuhira Kia, at the end of 2018 and in early 2019, the farmers hosted two all parties field trips, one of the upper catchment and one of the lower. Participants included Orkaha, Iwi's consultancy group that are the contact for farmers, Central Otago Environmental Society, Fish and Game, DOC, ORC councillors and farmers. The purpose of these sessions was to share knowledge, values and understanding of the Manuhira Kia catchment, to begin to establish a cohesive group working together for the well-being of the catchment towards and beyond minimum flow plan change and deem permit replacement. After the second meeting, the multi-stakeholder group decided that a neutral body would be better to host these, and ORC took them over. They became two groups, the Manuhirikia Reference Group and the Technical Advisory Group. Farmers have continued to participate in these groups ever since. The development of the technical aspects of the proposals in the applications started with gaining further understanding of the waterways and any adverse effects. The flows needed to protect or enhance in-stream values came first. If there were water quality or other impacts, then those issues were also identified at this time and mitigation options discussed. The irrigators then determined if they could remain viable under that regime and whether any changes in the intake, measuring or conveyance could improve the situation for the creek and or the irrigators, including water use efficiency, transport or habitat protection. Alterations proposed to the abstraction systems are varied but include fish screens, which are difficult and expensive, the installation or protection of perched culverts and waterfalls, merging of intakes and race alignment, surrendering of intake sites and residual flows, which ultimately result in the loss of the most reliable water to the irrigator. These are expensive alterations. Some will take specialist technical assistance to design and install. The biggest impact that farmers will need to adjust to will be the loss of the irrigation water in the middle of summer that goes towards the residual flows. As explained by other witnesses, sharing regimes are being developed, but actually operating these regimes will be a result of trial and error that has an immediate impact on the farmers' businesses. So in the driest time of the year, when farmers are already worried about dwindling water availability, they will be releasing further water into the creeks and rivers to uphold new residual flows. In all the groups we work with, there is a positive acknowledgement that this flow for the creeks and rivers and the changes proposed for the environmental improvements are important. However, there is also a nervousness about how much it will impact their businesses. Many of the applications for replacement permits have been completed as groups or sub-catchments as promoted by the ORC. This is a logical approach, as abstractors in the same catchment may impact on each other's ability to access water during low flow periods. Otago irrigators have established systems for sharing water during low flow times. In some catchments, mining right priorities have a role in this flow sharing. I've put two examples down. The main stem of the Manuhirikia, we have four large takes with the highest priority lower in the river. As flows decrease during dry summer months, the rates of take are reduced by an agreed ratio. And as flow sharing also starts in the main stem of the Manuhirikia, other takes all over the catchment of lower priority are asked to cut back. Using the Manuhirikia as an example again, the whole catchment has cooperated to produce a proposal to deliver environmental gains and manage water for the future. Then each sub-catchment group has their own proposal to deliver habitat protection and tributary residual flows. Other witnesses have described aspects of this large body of work. Mrs. Heckler and Mrs. Gillespie talked about the Lauder sub-catchment irrigators, who are a group that also sits within the overarching Manuhirikia catchment group. The development and agreement of the flow sharing in just the Lauder group took a lot of time and effort. Mrs. Heckler, Gillespie, Manson and Groundwater and the other farmers in the upper Lauder group and Roger Williams, the race manager, were in a meeting on the New Year's Day holiday, fine-tuning the last details before the application was lodged. The key element of the agreement is that the creek's residual flow comes first. The water that is left after that is shared on an agreed regime as the flows decrease. Ongoing access to water is also dependent on the proposed minimum flow that is included in the proposal at campground being met. If the flow at campground on the main stem dropped below the minimum flow, then all irrigators are off, regardless of the residual flow at the point of take. This illustrates how interlinked all the water users are in the one catchment and the strong motivation that has kept the group functioning together. The farmers prepared comprehensive applications with environmental mitigation options that will be expensive and tough to achieve, but aimed to enable longer-term permits to be secured that would give them the window of time and investment and investment security to implement the changes. The preparation for these applications commenced years ago and have sought to give effect to various versions of the NPSFM over time. In doing so, the applicants have sought to be responsible guardians of the water resource.
Before I ask you to answer questions from my friends, first is just context about your role in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. Can you identify for the court the irrigation schemes where you're the lead consultant in the permit renewal process?
I'll work from catchments. So in the Tyree catchment, we represent all of the Strathtyree irrigators. We have some irrigators in the main stem of the Tyree. We've got all of the Styx irrigators. So they're that upper terrace, a little subset.
Is that upstream of Payrow?
Upstream of Payrow. We have the Pigburn irrigators. We have the Ewburn irrigators. They are tributaries of the Tyree.
Is that Kidburn?
Pardon? Pig.
Pig. Right. Pigburn and Ewburn.
And Ewburn, yep. Yes. Both tributaries of the Tyree. And then there are a couple of little, they're not rats and mice, of course, but individual permits on individual farms. And then over the hill, we have...
Before we leave the Tyree, were you involved in Kyburn?
Yes. So we finished Kyburn, though. They've secured their permits, and now they're working to implement their consent conditions. And then over the hill, we have the next catchment is the Ida Valley, and the irrigators at the southern end is the Poolburn tributary of the... of the Ida Valley. So we have the private right holders in the Poolburn, and then we've got the Ida Valley Irrigation Company, which own the Manaburn and the Poolburn dams. And then over the hill, the next hill, we have the main stem of the Manahirakia and our clients in the Manahirakia. The Manahirakia is a collective effort of three consultancy companies. And we are responsible for the Lauder subcatchment group, the Thompson's subcatchment group, the Blackstone Irrigation Company, the Manahirakia Irrigation Company, and for reference, the Manahirakia Irrigation Company is the one closest to Alexandra, and I think that's got the MacArthur Ridge. It's got a lot of shareholders, many hundreds of shareholders. Over the next hill, into the Pisa, into Lake Dunstan, we have the Pisa Irrigation Company. We have all of the irrigators in the Bannockburn area, which includes the Carrick Irrigation Company. We have a few of the irrigators in the Lowburn tributaries. We had the Lindis Irrigation Group. They are finished. We have a few in the Hawea area. And then over the next hill going towards Wanaka, we have some irrigators in the Cadrona catchment.
And what about the Arrow?
We're assisting behind the scenes for the Arrow guys. They have another planning, another company that are running, and we're helping behind the scenes.
All right. So that breadth of experience has informed your evidence, has it?
Yes, that's right.
I want to talk about paragraph 7 of your summary, where you say that... So in the driest time of the year when farmers are already worried about dwindling water availability, they will be releasing further water into the creeks and rivers. What do you mean releasing water? Where's it coming from?
And so the proposals that we've established in the applications are about understanding what residual flows that is needed at the point of take. And so where the water is coming from is from what would normally be abstracted. So we've had the science has determined what needs to stay in the creeks, and that water goes to the creek first. And historically, that would have gone onto the paddocks.
Okay. Thinking about Falls Dam for the moment, at the head of the Manaharikia Valley,
yep.
What role does water release from Falls Dam play in habitat retention in the main stem of the Manaharikia?
Okay, so that's what role does it currently play or
currently
is proposed to play?
My question's directed at currently playing.
Okay,
now.
Right. Falls Dam, yeah. Currently playing.
And so that is relevant for the takes out of the main stem. And so in that instance, Falls Dam is storage for those takes. And the more that is required in the river, whether it be a minimum or a residual, that will come from Falls Dam. But it's not a massive reservoir, so eventually that will also come from the takes cutting back.
Okay. And
sorry, I didn't follow the last bit. Eventually that'll come from the takes cutting back, so now you're actually talking about the future or about the current?
That could happen now as well. It does happen now. Falls Dam at only 10 million cubic metres will run out very quickly if they don't share it carefully. And so already what happens is the takes reduce so that the voluntary minimum flow of 900 is maintained as the dam starts to reduce in its volume.
So voluntary minimum flow, we've heard about that as being,
yes.
As applies at the campground at Alexander, correct?
That's right.
Who are the parties to that?
There are four parties who are owners of Falls Dam: Omakau Irrigation Company, Manuhirikia Irrigation Company, Galloway Irrigation Society, and Blackstone Irrigation Company.
And it's those entities that reduce their taking of water to ensure that there's more in the main stem, is that what you're saying?
That's right.
To hit the 900?
That's right.
As opposed to Falls releasing water to hit the 900?
It's a combination.
Of both?
Of both.
Okay.
That's right. So they try and manage it so that Falls will last as long as possible through those dry summer months.
Individual farmers on the Manaharikia, they're not asked to do anything in terms of that 900 litres per second in terms of...
Currently on the main stem, that's where some of the priorities come into play as well. So in the whole catchment, if they're starting to cut back and if Falls is open, then they do call those priorities and ask for some of the takes to cut back or turn off as well.
Right, and we'll get to it later in terms of how those deemed permits operate. Okay.
So, thinking about Falls Dam for the moment, we've heard from a previous witness that there's a residual of 500 litres per second that applies at the outlet of Falls Dam. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Does that residual frequently bite?
No.
Can you explain
why? That's a safety net on the consent, it's rarely that low. So if you have a look at the hydrology, and I don't have that, and Matt Hickey would be better to talk to you about that. It's really at 500 at the bottom of Falls Dam.
And working our way down the main stem of the Manaharikia, there's a minimum flow at Ophir in Schedule 2A of the Regional Plan Water, isn't there?
That's right.
Do you remember what that is?
820.
820. What impact does the Manuhirikia Co-op Society's priority have on how that minimum flow is met?
Yes, so again, that's a flow that we rarely see, 820, as low as 820, because below that are two abstraction points of irrigators who are part of Falls Dam and part of working together in that catchment. And so there is an understanding that the water for both Manuhirikia and Galloway have to flow past Ophir. So that flow at that site is routinely much higher than 820 to achieve the flow to the takes that are downstream.
All right. And so is the voluntary campground minimum flow lower still in the catchment below the take points of Manuhirikia Irrigation Society and Galloway?
Yes.
And does that explain why that's been adopted?
Yes.
I want to talk about Tari for the moment. How is the Schedule 2A minimum flow at Payrau maintained?
During the middle of summer, the Payrau weir sits in the middle of the Tairi River. That is a portion of the Manuatoto Irrigation Company's infrastructure. And there is a residual flow on their permit for the Payrau weir of 850 litres a second. So that must flow past before they can take any water at all.
Okay. And is that the same as the minimum flow that's in the regional plan at Payrau?
Yes.
Is that a condition on their consent or something else?
It's a condition on their consent.
Okay. So what was that? 815, was it?
850,
okay.
Yeah. And what's the expiry date on the MIC consents for Loganburn?
Loganburn and Payrau, 2034.
Hmm. And the working our way down the Tairi catchment, the next minimum flow site is at Waipiata?
That's right.
And can you explain the circumstances of that?
So Waipiata has a 1,000 litres a second, and between Payrau and Waipiata, there are several tributaries, but there are four permits on the main stem. And so there are two deemed permits and there are two RMA permits, and we heard from Mrs. Sangster yesterday. Those farmers flow share to ensure that they achieve the 1,000 at Waipiata.
Hmm. Now, the Loganburn Reservoir was raised in the mid-2000s or thereabouts. Does that have any role to play in maintaining the minimum flow at Waipiata?
Yes, so when the Loganburn's dam height is within the raised section of the dam...
Sorry, say that again.
So if the water in the dam is higher than the old dam height, so sitting in the icing, so they applied for a permit, got a permit to raise it, so we've got a big chunk of icing on the top. So if the height of the dam is in that icing section and the flow at Waipiata goes below 1,000, the dam has to release more water until it gets to 1,200. So what happened is that in raising the dam, MIC basically asked for to store more water, and ORC said, yes, but you need to help maintain the health of the Tairi should it get very dry with some of that stored water.
Okay. And just so that the transcript makes sense, when you're referring to icing, you're adopting a cake analogy. You're not referring to when the dam's frozen.
No. No. It's related to food.
Yes. And so moving down the Tairi catchment still, the next minimum flow point is at Tiruiti.
Yep.
How do you spell that?
T-I-R-O-I-T-I. And is the Tiruiti effectively the control point for the Kyburn irrigators?
Yep, 12,500 is the minimum flow at Tiruiti.
Yes.
Controls Kyburn, Sowburn, and three other abstractors in that stretch.
Yes. And you said earlier that Kyburn's been reconsented, and that mm-hmm. includes Sowburn, does it?
Swinburn,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
And so what's the term of the permits on that?
They got 35 years.
From?
Oh, Phil. 2 years ago? 1 year? Two years ago.
Okay. So moving down the catchment again from...
Just pause there a second. Tiruiti.
Yes.
12,900... litres per second, 12,500 litres per second is the is a minimum flow or something else?
So it's a minimum flow in
Schedule 2?
Yep.
A, okay. And is that imposed on anybody's consent or is that...
Yes, it actually is on... Randomly, it's on a couple of the consents.
Randomly on a couple, okay.
And all the others have been... They expect it to be applied when the review clause is
so
exercised.
I wasn't sure whether you were just telling us what's in Schedule 2 or whether you were saying that the whole of the flow of the Tairi is geared to meeting the minimum flows at the various places downstream.
So what's happened is that ORC over the years have been inconsistent on whether it's been applied or not applied. Mm. And so on some permits it has and on some it hasn't. And so what's happened is the irrigators have said, well, actually, we'll meet it. And so that has become their targets for how they flow share. And they anticipate that it will be applied to those permits in the near future.
Okay, so your evidence is irrigators are managing use of water on the Tairi to ensure that the minimum flows in Schedule 2 are met?
That's right.
I think we have a decimal point in the wrong place. Did you say 12,500 litres a second or
12,500?
1250, thank you.
Right, and I think one of the questions that we've been interested in a long time is just how those Schedule 2A minimum flows and allocation limits have been applied or not applied. Anyway, your evidence is inconsistently.
From the ORC, yes. Mm. From the farmers, they are numbers that need to be adhered to.
Mm. Okay.
And so moving downstream from Tiruiti, can you describe the situation between there and the next minimum flow that's at Sutton? Is that where the Strathtairi irrigators are located?
Yes, it is. And I've just had a thought. I'm looking at Matt Hickey. Sutton is 1250. That I've got the wrong number. Tiruiti is 1150. My apologies. As soon as you said Sutton.
I'm sorry, this wasn't intending to be a memory game.
No, yes, I would need to check. So, yes, all the Strathtairi irrigators sit between Tiruiti and Sutton. They are on the main stem and they are on the tributaries. So there are a number of permits in both those locations between those two stretches, in that stretch.
And are the Strathtairi irrigators applications all in?
Yes, they came in stages. A big group of them came in a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, and the last ones came in last year. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
need to check those minimum flows now. Now that you've
Do you want to have the chance to do that?
No.
Well, you might need to, because this is,
yes, I'd like to get that right. I'd like to get that right.
This is
yes.
evidence coming out for the first
yes.
time. Okay.
Yes.
So
yep.
that's important.
Yep. So it's just Schedule 2A really.
Yes. So Phil? If we go, Madam Registrar, could you find the witness volume 1 of the common bundle? Document under tab 2. And I think we're looking for page 12, sorry, common bundle page 364, I think.
Thank you.
Yes.
And now, having committed that to memory. Yeah.
So my apologies. Waipiata, we got right at 1,000. Tiruiti, 1,100. And Sutton is 12,000. I mean, 1,250.
1,250. Thank you. So... what's your understanding about how much of the primary allocation and the Tairi catchment above Sutton actually remains to be reconsented?
So when Plan Chain 7 first came out, we did some maths, and we worked out that if we take out the non-consumptive takes and we're just looking at the consumptive takes, over or close to 70% of the water in the catchment has already been allocated. Now, that's not 70% of the permits. There are still a lot of permits and pieces of paper, but the water, 70% of the water has been allocated.
For a term...
of 15 years or more.
Thank you. Those are all my questions, Mum.
Thank you. Right. So, I just want to check who wants to do examination. Obviously, ORC and Fish and Game. Yeah. Do you need to... do you want to think about all of that evidence? Because we can just take the afternoon adjournment now. If you want to collect your thoughts, so you're happy to press on.
I might press on for a little bit.
Okay.
Hey, good afternoon. I want to start with your evidence in chief, and in particular, the section which starts at paragraph 15 about what you say are inconsistent messages related to data and knowledge.
Yeah.
And you've copied in your paragraph 15 some of Mr. De Pelsmaker's evidence in relation to the current lack of data and insufficient knowledge. You go on in your paragraph 16 to note that that's inconsistent with a council report in relation to priority catchment minimum flows presented on the 27th of June 2018. Now, that report would have been prepared prior to the NPSFM 2020 having been gazetted.
Yes, that was when they were preparing for minimum flows.
And therefore, the minimum flows that had been set in that report or recommended in that report would not have had the benefit of being set through the lens of community visions having been established under the NPSFM 2020?
That's correct.
And when you look at one of the reasons that Mr. De Pelsmaker has given, his reason B, the distribution of other values supported by groundwater and surface water, in relation to other values, those values might include cultural values?
Yes, they might include cultural values, but you'll see on some of those drip jigsaws is that the cultural reports were coloured in. So I hear what you're saying, but ORC was still saying in 2018 that they had done some of that work. Perhaps not all of it, but they had said that they had done some of it and they were ready to roll.
Now, when I look at your drip... Oh, sorry, I don't think they're your drip diagrams. When I look at the drip diagrams in your evidence, I see that the piece of the jigsaw in relation to cultural values, for example, is missing from two of the three.
Yeah, so Arrow is there. Manuhirikia and Kadrona are still to be filled in, yes.
And so when Mr. De Pelsmaker refers to a need to better understand other values, perhaps those are some of the values he had in mind.
Perhaps they are, yes.
Your paragraph 17, you go on to refer to the ORC having considered they had enough ecology and hydrology information in order to determine minimum flows.
Yeah.
Do you have an understanding of the NPSFM 2020?
I'm not a planner, no, and so I do rely on the rest of the team that work with the farmers alongside me to bring that to the table.
Do you understand that when establishing minimum flows and residual flows, there are a range of values in addition to ecology and hydrology that need to be considered?
Yes, I do.
You go on in this part of your evidence at your paragraph 20 to refer to evidence from Mr. Hickey, which he set out in his table 2, highlighting that ORC do indeed have the data required to understand, in this context, the Arrow, Upper Kadrona and Manuhirikia rivers, amongst others?
Yes.
And when you look at table 2 in Mr. Hickey's evidence, there's no reference to cultural values in that table?
Yes.
Sorry. Yes, there's no reference.
I agree with you. I agree if you're quoting. I haven't got the table in front of me, but I trust that that's correct.
And in relation to amenity values?
I have to trust you. I haven't got the table in front of me.
I'm happy to provide you the evidence. I know it's horrible being asked to... Not that I think Mr. Moore's a liar, but I don't think he's a liar, but it probably will feel better to actually have it in front of you. So just get Mr. Hickey's evidence from ORUG. Which is tab 37.
And it's page 13 of the Hickey brief.
Did you say page 13?
Page 13, yep. Yes.
Yep. No amenity list, no amenity there.
And no cultural values?
Not on that list, no.
Perhaps in fairness, with the exception of key threats to Indigenous ecological values? no recreational values?
I would have to be sure, I would have to read the paragraphs ahead of that. In that table, there is not. However, some of these areas build to feed information about recreation values, and so I couldn't say for sure. But for example, if you've got water quality data, then you can determine if swimming spots are suitable for swimming, if or kayaking spots are suitable for kayaking. So it's not specifically saying tick for a recreational value, but it's got some of the information that you build up to make that assessment.
You accept that it's only a subset of the information required to establish or to understand flows necessary to sustain recreational values? So there's both a water quality and a water quantity component?
I couldn't say for sure, actually, if it's a subset. It looks fairly thorough to me, but it's not my area of expertise.
To move on now to your paragraph 27, and in your paragraph 27 you are discussing some of the work that is undertaken by neighbouring businesses to work together in terms of managing the water resources. And you note that despite complexities within the catchments that you have been working in, you've always been able to achieve a coordinated approach.
Yes.
Now, in terms of the reaching or achieving a coordinated approach, is it fair to say that that's occurring in the absence of regulatory drivers? So a community is working together, absent anything in the planning regime, to come up with a flow sharing regime that the community considers is fair amongst the various abstractors?
I'm not 100% sure what you mean in the absence of regulatory drivers. So could you just explain a little bit more?
So when these groups are, I guess, looking into the future in terms of a world post-priorities, the way in which the water resource is shared, the discussions in relation to that sharing are occurring as between members of the group, not to give effect to a particular planning provision.
How it works is that they first of all start with, well, what do we need to leave to look after the river or the creek? And then what is left for us as a group that rely on that surface water for us to share? And how do we share what's left in a way that is fair amongst ourselves? But I don't think that's what you're asking.
No, it does help. So let's assume there's a minimum flow, and that part of the jigsaw puzzle has been understood. The basis on which then the flow above that minimum flow is to be shared is determined amongst the group according to principles that, as a group, they determine appropriate.
Yeah, so I guess there's two cases there. If there's already a minimum flow in place, such as the Tyree, then it's easy. We set a safety margin above that, and I heard Mrs. Sangster say yesterday that the minimum is 1,000 on the Tyree, and flow sharing starts at 1,200 because if the minimum flow is breached, everybody is off. So you stay away from minimum flow. And in that instance, it's a clear regulatory signal. In the other situations where we are developing the proposals that have gone into the applications, we know there'll be a minimum flow in at campground. We have worked to see, have put all of our information to see what that would be, and we also determined if there is a residual flow, and then the sharing regime has to meet both of those. So the mechanism is what the farmers have offered as the proposed regulation in the future. They've offered it for consent conditions. Is that?
I wonder whether we might take a step perhaps back in time, so yeah. Prior to the preparation of applications for replacement permits.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding from evidence given by other witnesses is that flow sharing amongst community members of a community is a reasonably common occurrence.
Yep.
Across the region.
Yes.
And that flow sharing agreements have been entered into voluntarily between members of a community.
Yes, if they are not predetermined by location or mining rights or priorities.
And evidence has been given, in fact, a significant number of witnesses called during the Cromwell weeks that the priorities themselves weren't often being exercised, but rather the flow sharing agreements that were in place amongst communities established the basis upon which each of them took water.
Generally, the flow sharing agreements come after the deem permits have been replaced. So the active flow sharing agreements like Kyburn have got a very strong one. All of their deem permits have been replaced, and the flow sharing agreement came in after that.
I think I'll take a break there. Not sure that was the evidence last week, but and I know where you're going with this, but you also have to consider to what extent is the voluntary flow sharing empowered by a priority sitting there. It's the stick.
Yeah, I'm getting to that.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
All right.
We'll take the break.
All rise.